Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Moed Katan, Daf Yud Aleph. We begin by the Mishnah about 10 lines down. We're learning today Li'ili Nishmas Rabbi Jack Ring, Harav Yaakov Ring Ben Shmuel. Also Li'ili Nishmas Carol Rosenberg, Kirnesha Leah Bas Yehuda. I received some other yard sites from previous days, so I will say the Shia today Li'ili Nishmasim as well. Edith Taub, I don't have her Hebrew name, as well as for Leba Fruma Badzelig, and also Meir Ben Shlomo. And also, finally, Gussi Mason, Gutta Bas Moshe Halevi. All the neshamas we're learning for today should have an aliyah from all learning. So we begin with the Mishnah on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, about 10 lines down from the top. And the Mishnah tells us, Osim Maka Legag Ulamir Peses. One is permitted on Cholomoid to go and make a maka. A maka is some sort of a fence or a protection around an area that is higher than the ground around it or the surrounding area around it. So you're allowed to make a maka for a rooftop or gag, where mirpesis is like a porch. You used to have second floors that you would walk up to, the second floor, and obviously you'd be allowed to go and put up a maka. Some mafarshim say that this is the mitzvah of makkah. This is the famous mitzvah that you have to put a protective fence around you. But the Bir Halacha brings down the Ritva. The Bir Halacha in Simon Tov Kuf Mem brings down the Ritva that says, no, this is not talking about the mitzvah of makkah. It's talking about an area where you don't need a makkah from a halakhic point of view, but you're putting up a three tefach type of a little wall, and that would be permissible on Chol HaMoed. But most of the Mefarshim disagree and say this is talking about the mitzvah of makkah. The Ritva says if it's the mitzvah of makkah, you can do this in the normal way, but most of the Mefarshim seem to understand this, that this is talking about even the mitzvah of makkah. So you're allowed to do this on Chol HaMoed. However, the Mishnah says you're only allowed to do this ma'aseh hedyot, aval lo ma'aseh umud. You're only allowed to do this in a non-professional way. The Gemara will describe what it means in a non-professional way, but not in a professional way. You can't have a bricklayer come in there and put up bricks with cement. That is not allowed, even though you're doing the mitzvah of makkah, according to many Rishonim. Nevertheless, you're not allowed to do this in the professional way when you do this in a regular way of a hedyot. The Mishnah continues and says, shofin es hasedokin. The two interpretations over here, what shofin es hasedokin means, it means you're allowed to go and put plaster over your cracks in your tanur. In other words, you can fix the cracks in your tanur. That's the way Rashi has it over here. And the Rashi in the Ksiv Yad, he says, it's talking about they used to have flat roofs that were very, very slightly tilted by putting on layers of plaster. So this way the water would roll off them. Otherwise they were flat roofs because they used to use their roofs so they couldn't be too slanty like our roofs are today. But in order to make sure that the rainwater rolled off the roof, they would put in additional layers of plaster, and this way the water would have a slight incline and roll off. So if there are cracks over there, the water would go into the house. So you're allowed to go and fix these cracks. That's the Ksiv Yad Rashi, saying it's not talking about a tanur, it's talking about the cracks in the roof. In any event, you are allowed to do this on Chol HaMoed, and likewise, umagil nosom b'magila, when you're going to go and put the plaster up over here, you can even use a utensil known as a magila. This is some type of a roller that you would go and flatten out the plaster that you're putting up there on the roof in order that you fill in the cracks. And then it adds, biyad uberegel. You can do it with your hand, or you can do this with your foot, by either pounding on it with your hand or pounding on it with your foot, to go and smooth out the plaster to get into the cracks. But you can't use avolo b'mechotzayim. You can't use this other fancy utensil known as mechotzayim that the professionals would use. Obviously, the Gemara is going to ask, what does it mean you can use a magila, magila, but not with a melchatzayim? And what does it mean with your hand or your foot? It seems to be some contradictory statement, so we have to more reconcile this. Mishnah continues and says, if you have various types of problems with your door, so therefore your house is going to be open to robbers. So if you have the tzir is the pivot. They used to have doors that were put into the socket in the ground, which is the tzinor. It would be a pivot from the door that would go into the ground. I think our hinges today, but similar in function. So you'd have this protrusion coming out from the bottom of the door that would go into this socket in the ground. That's the tzir and the tzinor. So if these broke, you'd be allowed to go and fix them on Chol HaMoed. Likewise, if you have a korah, the korah is like the lintel beam that you have at the top of the door. If that was not properly nailed in, vahamanul, that's the lock itself. The mafteach is the key to the lock. All of these, shenishbru, so now your door is going to be open and people could come and rob you, so it would be a dover aved, so misaknun bimod, you'd be allowed to go and fix them on Chol HaMoed. However, you can't go and save up your work to say, I'll wait till Chol HaMoed, but I'm not working, and take care of all of these repairs. Well, actually, skaving, lasos melachto b'moed. You're not allowed to go and say, well, it's 2 weeks before the Moed, I have the door that's a little bit broken over here, I'm going to wait till Chol HaMoed when I'll be able to do this much more easily because I have more time. That you're not allowed to do. So if it turns out that it breaks right on Yom Tov or right before Yom Tov and you couldn't fix it before Yom Tov, so then you'll have to fix it on Chol HaMoed. Finally, the Mishnah concludes and says, "V'kol kivoshin, anything that you have to go and pickle to preserve it, shuyachol lechol mehem b'moed, as long as you're able to eat from it on Chol HaMoed." In other words, the pickling will still allow you to eat it on Chol HaMoed. It will be pickled in time before the end of Yom Tov. So therefore, you're pickling it for use on Chol HaMoed kosher. Then you're allowed to go and pickle it. But if it's pickling it now, and it's going to take 3 weeks for it to get pickled, and it's not edible during this period of time, then you're not allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. Gemara starts off and says, "Hey chidami ma'isa hejot," when we said that you're allowed to fix the makkah, or on the gag or on the mirpesis, you could go put up a makkah. We said you can only use it in a non-professional way. You can't use it in a professional way. So we have two interpretations what exactly this means. Rav Yosef Amar b'hutzu b'dafna, he says you can make basically a temporary type of a structure that's made out of the branches or the fronds of a palm tree and various other types of branches, and you interlock them together, and as a result you block off the exit way falling off from this gag or mirpeses. So this temporary type of structure made out of these interlocking branches, the huta and the dafna, is allowed. That's the opinion of Yosef. But Masnisatana, we learn in the Braisa, and we've had this previously as well, that it's talking about making a wall without cement. So tsor, bitsor, you can put stones together. However, ain't no toch bitip, but you can't cement them in place. So therefore, you just put up the bricks without cementing them in place. That's what it means, a non-professional way of doing it. Then we said in the Mishnah that if you have either the tanur or you have the rooftop, depending on Rashi or the Ksiv Yad Rashi, shofen es hastokin, and then it said umagilin olson b'magilin, and you can use this implement, this roller, to go and flatten out the plaster so it goes into the cracks and fills in the space of either the tanur or of the gag. So where it says, if you're allowed to use this magila, hash magila amisharmi, so then certainly, be out of a regal, would you have to tell me that you can pound it down with your hand or with your foot? But boy, would you need to tell me that? If I can use the fancy implement, the magila, so of course I can pound it with my hand or with my foot, so it seems to be inconsistent. Well, it says, you're right, that's not what the Mishnah really said. Hakikamai, this is what the Mishnah was telling us. Shofin es hastokin magila no son ke'en magila, be out of a regal. You're allowed to do a great job, as if you had done it with this roller, if you do it with your hand or your foot. In other words, you don't have to do a lousy job just to get a temporary fix. You could do a really good job, albeit you're pounding it with your hand or your foot, but you're doing it such a good job as if you had done it with a roller. However, under no circumstances can you use the professional implement. That you're not allowed to use this professional roller, this real type of an implement, that you're not allowed to go and do. So therefore, the Mishnah makes very good sense now. It says you can do a very good job with your hand or your foot, but you're not allowed to use the full professional implement because that would be too much. Then we said in the Mishnah, if your door is broken in some way, you're allowed to fix it on Chol HaMoed as long as you didn't go and say, I'm leaving this work for Chol HaMoed. So if you have the tzir, vatzinor, the various types of pivots and the hole that you put the pivot into, the pipe that you put the pivot into, or the lintel, the beam, vakorov, vamanol, vamavteach, the lock itself, or the keys to the lock, if any of them were broken, shenishbru, mesakin b'moed, you'll have to go fix it in the moed as long as you didn't leave it for that. Gemara says, our Mishnah seems to say you're allowed to do this, but there is a Mishnah in both Maisa Sheni and Sota, which seems to say that you're not allowed to do this. And it says over there, now the background for this, Rashi points out, is that this is talking about during the days of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Yochanan Kohen Gadol was Kohen Gadol for many, many years, 60 or 80 years, and it says that during his time, up until his reign, as the Kohen Gadol, people used to bang with hammers through Yerushalayim on Chol HaMoed. So ad yomav hayapatish makib Yerushalayim v'chulei. So until his time, until he was decreeing otherwise, the people used to go and bang with hammers during Chol HaMoed in Yerushalayim. In other words, they did work on Chol HaMoed. Now that Mishnah says ad yomav, until his rule as the Kohen Gadol, they did this in. However, Mikan Vaelech, once he became the Kohen Gadol, he stopped this practice low. And therefore, you're not allowed to use tools to go fix doors and lintels and things like that. So how can our Mishnah contradict what Yochanan Kohen Gadol did earlier and the Mishnah in Maaseh Sheni and Sota? So there seems to be a contradiction. So he says, no, it's not a contradiction, Lokasha. depends. You're talking about two different types of noises, kan b'nafoche and kan b'nagare. So when you're dealing over there with Yochanan Kohen Gadol, he didn't allow them blacksmiths to go and take their hammer and bang it on the anvil, because that made a tremendous amount of noise. And it looked like people were doing regular work on Chol HaMoed, so he stopped that practice, so it shouldn't look like people, Chol HaMoed is a regular day of work, you hear the regular work sounds. But in our Mishnah, it's talking about nagare. Nagare are carpenters. Carpenters don't make as much noise as the blacksmiths. They're not banging with a huge hammer on a huge anvil. They're, you know, they're cutting with a saw. So there is some noise, but it's not as bad. And therefore, Yochanan Kohen Gadol wasn't masakin that they couldn't bang with the saws that the carpenters would use. He just didn't allow them to bang with the blacksmith's hammer and anvil. Chista doesn't like that. Maskevah Rechista. Rechista asked the obvious question. He says, Yomro, people are going to say, oh, color, Abba's Osir, color, Zuta Shari. It depends how much noise. A large sound, that you're not allowed to do. A smaller sound, that you're allowed to do. You're going to start differentiating between large sounds and softer sounds. That doesn't make any sense. It's very difficult to say, you know, up to 20 decibels, it's allowed. 40 decibels is not allowed. Very difficult to say. So therefore, Rav Chisda gives a different teretz to reconcile our Mishnah with the Mishnah in Ma'aseh Sheni and Sota. El Omer Rav Chisda lo kasha, ha b'magole, ha b'chatzinei. Rashi explains magole is a mesar gadol. It's a huge type of a saw or a plane. The lo molid kolo klum. That magole doesn't make any type of noise whatsoever. And that's why our Mishnah allows you to do this. Even though it's a big saw, it's a big plane, doesn't make any noise. Now, obviously, it makes some noise, but it doesn't make any noise that's really going to be audible outside that room. So, therefore, it's not sounding like the people are working on Chol HaMoed if you're walking in the streets of the city. However, the chatzine, that's a big type of an axe, also, that Rashi says also, the habu oludi kolotve, because that makes a noise that could be heard outside. So, therefore, our Mishnah permits something that can't be heard outside, and the Mishnah in Ma'aseh Sheni and in Sota prohibits something that was a Yochanan Kohen Gadol, prohibited something that makes noise that could be heard when you're walking in the streets of Yerushalayim. That's teretz number one. Teretz number two, Rav Papa Amar, kan kodem gzeira, kan liach gzeira. Oh, Yochanan Kohen Gadol made the gzeira after our Mishnah, not before our Mishnah. So our Mishnah was the Mishnah Rishona. And then along comes Yochanan Kohen Gadol and he changes it around. And we have a rule. Mishnah Rishona lo zozim imikoma. When Rebbe wrote down the Mishnais, because Eis l'Sas Hashem heferus osecha, so normally this is Torah Shabbat Pen, you're not allowed to write this down. So here, when Rebbe wrote it down, sometimes he would leave the Mishnah as it was, even though subsequently it was changed. It's called Mishnah Rishona, the original form of the Mishnah. Lo zozim imikoma, doesn't move from its place. And therefore, the contradiction seemingly between the later Mishnah, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and our Mishnah, the earlier Mishnah, it's not a contradiction because one was before the Gzeira of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, one is after Gzeira of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Why does our Mishnah still exist? Because Mishnah Mishona lo zozim imikoma. That's teretz number two. Teretz number three, Rav Ashi Amar, this is the machlokis over here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, and our Mishnah goes according to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, and the Mishnah of Yochanan Kohen Gadol goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rav Ashi Amar, ha Rabbi Yehuda, ha Rabbi Yossi, what is that? The Yom Rav Yitzchok bar Avdimi, Rav Yitzchok bar Avdimi said, man tana shinui b'moed b'dover ove. Who is the author of the Mishnah that says that you must make some sort of a shinui when you're working on Chol HaMoed, even for a dover ove? That's not Rabbi Yossi, that's the Loka Rabbi Yossi, that's in fact Rabbi Yehuda. That's the opinion of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. And Omer Ravina, Kiman Madlin or Idna, Kaviusa, the Dosha, who is the opinion says you're allowed to raise, Madlin means to raise up, Kaviusa, the Dosha, that means like the lintel on the doorway that broke off, on Chol HaMoed, oh, that's our Mishnah, Kiman Rabbi Yossi. So our Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, and the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is the opinion of the Mishnah that Yochanan Kohen Gadol authored. Okay. Now we have our Mishnah. We said, Kivoshin Shuyochol Lecho B'moed Kovshin. If you go and pickle something on Chol HaMoed that would be edible on Chol HaMoed, then you're allowed to pickle it. But if you're pickling it for usage after Chol HaMoed, then you're not allowed to use it. So Gemara says, Bidisa Levi Kavre. Now this is a very interesting expression. If you look in Agos HaBach HaOsalef, he tells us a very interesting origin of the word Pumpadisa. So he says the girsa of the Rif, Rav Alphus, is that Bit Pumpadisa Levi Kavre. What does that mean? So the Ran says Pum was the name of the place. Hayoshev Al Nahar Bidisa. So Pum Bidisa, the famous Babylonian city of Pum Bidisa, was the city of Pum that was on the river Bidisa. And Levi Kavra means Tzadu Veviu Dogim Rabim Shinisyabi Shanor Umeswa Dogim. This river dried up, it overflowed, and a whole bunch of the fish overflowed or it dried up. And therefore, you had a whole bunch of fish that were lying out there, easily able to be caught, and they were dying, or they were already dead. So different opinions over here exactly what happened. The bottom line is, in this river, Bedisa, which was next to the town of Pum Bedisa, or others say Levi was the name of a place as well. In any event, Kavre, there were a lot of fish. Kavre either is a specific type of fish or is a general word for fish. Tosa says that it may be talking later on. We'll see that it's a specific type of a fish known as the Kavre. In any event, this area, the riverbed either overflowed and the fish came out and then the waters receded and there were a whole bunch of fish around there that could easily be trapped. They were either in small pools of water that had collected, but the fish were going to be easily trapped from there, or the actual fish were no longer in water. So Ozu Kuliyama, everybody came, this was a bounty, and Tsud Aisu Kavra, and they trapped these fish, they caught these fish, and now it's Cholamoid. So what are they going to do with all this fish? They couldn't eat all of it on Cholamoid, it was too much. So Sharulu Rava permitted them, Lemimlach Binayu, to go and salt them, to preserve them, so in fact, they would have over here fish that would be able to be eaten after the Yontif, but he permitted them to salt it on Chol Hamoid. So this seems to go against our Mishnah, so Amalei Abaye, but not our Mishnah, Kavosh Meyochel Lechol Behem Bamoid Koshan, implication being that if you're not going to be able to eat them on Chol Hamoid, you're not allowed to do this. Now, if you go and salt them, they're not going to be edible on Chol Hamoid. So how, Rava, were you allowed to do this? That's what Abaye asked Rava. Rava answers, no, I'm allowed to do this, because Amalei, he says, Kivin the Meikara Adaita Da'achila Aitinu, when they brought in each fish technically could have been eaten. So therefore, every fish that they're bringing in, they technically could say, I'm using this one, and then they could change their mind. Gemara elsewhere tells us that if you have Osovies Beno, if you have the mother calf, and let's say the baby calf that are falling into a pit, you're not allowed to shech both of them, and it's on Yontif, and you're not allowed to go bring them out because you can't shech both of them, so you're allowed to make, according to some opinions, this haroma, and say, I'll bring out the first one and say, that's the one I want to eat. And then you change your mind and say, no, I think I want to eat the other one. So to over here, you bring in 25 fish. You can only eat 5 of them on Yontif, on Chol Hamoed. So therefore, each one you can say, this is one of the 5 that I'm going to eat. Then you change your mind. So therefore, once you do that, now it's a dover aved. Shavik lo paste. Now you have all these fish, and if you don't go salt them, they're going to be a dover aved. Kifrak macho ha aved. I mean, this is now like you have schora, you have merchandise that is going to go and be spoiled. So it's like the milk. If you don't sell the milk, it's going to spoil. So vishari, and therefore Rava permitted them to do this. That's Rava's rationale for allowing them to go and pickle all of the fish. Alternatively, v'ikud diamrei that Rava not only paskin after the fact that they could go and pickle the fish, he lechatchila told them go shari lehu Rava. He permitted them to go meitzad meizal ayusei umimlach. He says go and trap the fish and go bring the fish. And lechatchila you're allowed to go and do this, even though it's chol hamoed. Again, Amalei Abaye, Vanan Kvoshin Shuyocho Lecho Mehem Bemoi Koshon Tnan, our Mishnah said you can only do this if you're going to be able to eat them on Chol Hamoed. And here, if they're salted like this, you're not going to be able to eat them on Chol Hamoed. So, same question as before. And it's an even stronger question because here he allows them Lechatchila to do this. It wasn't only Vidyevit after they brought the fish back. So again, Rava says, no problem. Amalei, he says to Abaye, Hanami Misachle Agav Itzitsa. The reason why you technically could eat them on Chol Hamoed is if you press them. Some say that it's talking about if you press the fish, like a lashon of metzitza, you're squeezing out over here the salt. So if you press it a lot, then you can squeeze out the salt. Others say it means you rinse it and soak it, and you get rid of the salt that way. And we see Kehod the Shmuel, like Shmuel did, this exactly happened to Shmuel, that he had this very heavily salted fish, and they either squeezed it 60 times, they pressed it 60 times, or they soaked it 60 times and it made it edible to eat. So therefore, technically, these fish could be edible on Chol Hamoed, and that's why Rava allowed it. Rava Ikla Reish Galusa, Ovelay Shisin Itzivyachal. One time Rava went to the Reish Galusa's house and they gave him these salty fish, and they either again pressed it 60 times or they soaked it 60 times and it was edible. Yachal. So you see that this is Halach Lamaisa, this is correct. Similarly, Rav Ikla Lebei Rav Shapir. Rava once went to the house of Rav Shapir. Aisu l'kamayhu, and they brought in front of him, he was a noteworthy guest, and they brought him out as a real delicacy. They brought him out how kavra, this certain type of a fish that was prepared in 3 different ways. Tilsa bishula, a third of this fish had been bashal, it was cooked. Tilsa milcha, a third of it was salted, that's the heavy salting that we're talking about. And tilsa tavya, and a third of it was roasted or broiled. So they did this fish that was salted, so you see that they pressed it to make it edible, and therefore you see that if you have a salted fish, if you go and press it or soak it, you can make it edible. Amar Rav, Rav tells us now four things that a certain well-known fisherman, Ada Tzaida, told him. So Amar Rav, Amar Li Ada Tzaida, number one, Kavra Somuch L'Misrichei Male. He says, the best time to eat a fish is when it's about to become spoiled. So let's say the fish is 4 days old and on day five it's going to spoil. Oh, the best time to eat it is day four. Tosu says, this doesn't seem to be the way we would eat something like this. And Lamaisa today, the last thing you want to do is have a fish that's about to spoil and eat that. It would be either dangerous or wouldn't taste very good. So Tosu suggests that Nishtanu Ateva, that the practices, the physical sciences have changed. And therefore, in those days, it was actually good to eat it, but obviously, for us, it's not good to eat. Bismanenu, it's not good. Alternatively, Tosa says, this is what I mentioned before, that there was a specific fish known as the skavre, that for this particular fish, it was good if it was almost ready to spoil. That somehow was the best time to eat this fish. Okay, the second statement that Adat Saida told Rav, Amar Rav, Amar Li Adat Saida, the second statement, Kavra, Tavya B'Yachua, says the best way to eat this type of fish, this Kavra, either this generic fish or this specific fish, is to go and roast it, to broil it, B'Yachua. That means with its brother, which means in salt. Go salt it and broil it. And then afterwards, go and put it, asuke biavuo, go put it in its father. This is a reference to water, where the fish grows from. And then, michle bibrei, and when you eat it, go and dip it into the brei, the sun, so to say. That means like the stuff that comes out of the fish, all of the fish brine that comes out from the fish. So go and dip it into that. And then ishte, afterwards, go and drink aleyavua, go drink more water afterwards. Some suggest it was the water where this fish came from. So go and drink that water. That's the best way to eat this fish. Amar Rav, Amar Li Adat Saida, the third thing that Rav said that Adat Saida told him was kavra, tachle v'chalava. If you're eating these fish, this either the specific fish or general fish, tachle is cress and chalava is milk, liton gufa, velo liton purya. He says after you eat this, it's good to exercise as opposed to go to sleep. It's not good to go to sleep. Don't go rest right after you eat these fish. In order for them to be digested well, you should do some exercise afterwards. And the fourth and final thing, Amar Rav, Amar Li Adat Saida, Adat Saida told me, Kavra tachle bal chalva. Again, all of these three things, this fish, this cress and milk, if you're going to drink something with them, maya, better to drink water, velo shichre, not to drink beer. Beer is a little bit more dangerous than water after this. And certainly, if your choice is beer or wine, shichre velo chama, better to drink beer than wine. Somehow wine is not going to be good or healthy for a person if he had this type of a fish or cress or milk. This concludes the first beautiful parak of Moed Katan. Hadron Alecha Mashkin Beis Hashlochen. Hadron Alecha Mashkin Beis Hashlochen. Hadron Alecha Mashkin Beis Hashlochen. We turn to Yud Aleph Amud Beis, and we begin the second parak. And the new parak begins with the new Mishnah, Misha Hofach Ezesov. We're dealing here with a person that had turned over his olives in order to go be able to go and press them. Now, once you start this process, the olives will be ruined unless you finish this process. So Rashi tells us, Shehizminon lichtanem al gabi habad, they prepared to get them ready for the press, and to take out the oil from them. And now, if you don't continue doing this, they will spoil and you'll lose all your olives. Now, what happened? The Iru Evel, Nebuch, this person, had one of the Zion Krovim that he has to go and sit Shiva for occurred. And this is talking about, Rashi says, B'shayimos Hashanah. It's not talking about that it happened right next to Chol HaMoed. The Eino Yochol Litneim Agabi Yabad, because he's in mourning, because he's in Avelus, he's not allowed to do any work. And he can't go and take these olives that have already been turned over and go put them into the press. Because Lefisha Ovel also Basiyas Melacha, because the Ovel is not allowed to do Melacha. Now, Rashi understands that this is the end of this statement. And now we have a new statement. O Ones, or under other circumstances, Rashi says over here that Hainu milsa achrite, a new situation. We finished talking about the Ovel, and now we're talking about a person that right before Sukkot or Pesach, right before he was going to have a Chol HaMoed, he started doing a process and expected to finish it before the Yontif started. And this is this milsa achrite, this new case, Kloma Mishofach Azesov Ne'erega, a person had overturned his olives, preparing them for the bad, for the press, before the regal, and there was supposed to be plenty of time before the regal that he could do this. Then the Iru Ones. That's what it means, onus. Some sort of unavoidable situation happened, and an onus, an accident happened. And now, he wasn't able to do this before the regal, and now it's Chol HaMoed. And if you don't do it on Chol HaMoed, you're going to be suffering a huge financial loss. So that's the new case, according to Rashi, onus. An onus occurred, this is before the regal, nothing to do with Avelus. Or alternatively, the onus was Oshahit U Paulim. He had hired workers and the workers didn't show up. They claimed they wanted more money. They said, no, we got a better job. And he had all these workers lined up 2 days before Yontif to do this pressing in the Beis Abad. And he didn't get it done before Chol HaMoed. Now, if he doesn't do it on Chol HaMoed, he's going to suffer huge financial loss. So what is he allowed to do in this situation? The Mishnah says, Toein Kora Rishona Uminicha Li'achra Moed. You can go put the first beam on top of the olives. In other words, you can begin the crushing process and the main part of the oil will come out, and anything extra you normally would do, additional pressing, that you can't do on Chol HaMoed because that would only be a very small financial loss. Either there's no loss at all over here if you wait, once it starts to come out, it's not ruined, or even if there's a small loss over here, it's considered a small loss, that you're not allowed to work on Chol HaMoed for that. Umenich liach HaMoed, you have to wait to do the rest of the pressing until after Chol HaMoed is over, until after the Yontif is over. This is the opinion, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi says, no. Zolef, Vigomer, Vigof, that's the Girsa that we have. Rashi doesn't have the Girsa Vigof. Tosa says the Vigof over here is talking about that you have to cover up the container afterwards because either Schwarzen will get in there, various creatures will get in there and ruin it, or that it will in some way not last well if you don't seal it off. In any event, Rav Yossi says you're allowed to do everything Zolei, Fagav, Fagav, Kedarko in the normal way. And this is the machlokis that we alluded to in the first part of this year today. We said there's a machlokis between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi in terms of our previous Mishnah at the end of the last parak and the Mishnah that we had from Maisa Sheni and Sota from Yochanan and Kohen Gadol. So this is that machlokis, Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Yossi. Rav Yehuda says that you're not allowed to go and do things in the normal fashion. You just put down the Toan Kor Rishona and then you have to leave it till after the Moed, but you can't do the regular normal way. And Rav Yossi says, no, you can do it Kedarko. You can do everything in the normal way that you can go and finish pouring off the olives, Zolev, you can allow to go and do this activity, Kolomar Nosno, Agabi Beis Abad, the Sochet, you can squeeze out, Hakol, all of it, everything that is being poured out, that's called Ziluf, that's the Zolev, and you can finish off the process, Kidarko, in the normal way. Nadi Morris starts off and says, there are two cases over here in the Mishnah. You never answered what you can do in the first case of Rachmon Lassan, the person who became an Ovel. Pasach B'Evel, B'Siyim B'Moed. He started off talking about a case, Mishof HaGazesa of Ero Ovel, and then all of a sudden, you say you're going into a Chol HaMoed situation. What's the din in the first part? See, we have a machlokis. So Amar Rav Shisha Bered Ravidi, so Merez, Devarim HaMutarim B'Moed, Asurim B'Mei Evlo. There's a difference over here, because in the first part, even though Nebuch, this person, had this horrible thing happen to him, that he's now in Ovel, one of his Zayin Krovim died, and he's not a Dumalacha. Tough luck. You lost all that business, whatever it is, the olives that's going to be lost. So you lost them. You can't do anything about it because the Ovel is not allowed to do work. And sorry, buddy, you're going to end up also having a financial loss over here. However, for Chol HaMoed, that's permitted to do certain things. So even though things are permitted to do on Chol HaMoed, you're not allowed to do them Yimei Evlo. That's the opinion, the strict opinion of Rav Shisha Bered Ravidi. Ravashi disagrees. Ravashi Omar Loma Boy Kama. No! He's saying over here, if you're allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed, you certainly can do it for your Avelis. And this is the way you have to understand the Mishnah according to Ravashi. Loma Boy Kama. You didn't have to tell me Loma Boy, then they have low. If a person, Rachmon B'Sam, comes in Ovel, he's certainly allowed to go and take care of this Dovor Oved. Because the whole din of Avelus, din of the Rabbanon, who is a din of the Rabbanon, and therefore it's allowed because the only reason that an Avel is not allowed to do work is because the rabbi said, you're not allowed to do work. We want you to keep your mind on the Avelus and not take your mind off it by going to work. But if there's going to be a significant financial loss, the rabbis never said that that then applies. And even El Afilu B'chol HaMoed, under the Moed, the Issa Malach and the Raisa, which, remember from the very first year, we said it is a question of what does it mean, is an Issa Daraisa with Malacha. Some suggest that it is an absolute Issa Daraisa to do work on Chol HaMoed, and just that the rabbis were assigned to decide what is included in this Issa Daraisa or not. Others say, no, it's based upon Psukim. It's not really a real Issa Daraisa, but it's a strong Asmachta from the Psukim. And therefore, that's why it's like an Issa Daraisa. But certainly, it's stricter than Avelus, which is only definitely a Din Derabbanan. So, therefore, if you're allowed to do this on the Moed, El Afilu Moed, the Issa Malachim and the Raisa, so certainly B'Mokim say the Sharu Rabbanon, so then, if it's only a Din Derabbanan by Avelus, then you're certainly allowed to go and do this. So we have two starkly opposite opinions over here. Rashi Shabrei Ravidi says, no, you can't do this for Avelus, but you can do it for Chol HaMoed, and Rav Ashi says, if you can do it for Chol HaMoed, you certainly can do it for Avelus. Now we have a Tanya Kavasi, the Rashi Shabrei Ravidi. We have a Raisa in support of Rashi Shabrei Ravidi. The Brisa is going to take us really almost to the end of the daf, and the Brisa says as follows. Eilu dvarim ha'osim lo'avil b'mei evlo. The following things are allowed to be done for the avil. The avil can't do it himself, and that's why this is going to be like Rosh Hashanah Rav Yehuda. It says the avil is not allowed to do these malachos himself, because he's also to do malacha, albeit midirabbanon, during his avelus, but somebody else can do these malachos for him. Eilu dvarim ha'osim lo'avil b'mei evlo. Somebody else can do these malachos for the avil. You might have thought that there's no work allowed to be done on behalf of the Avel, so it tells us because there's a financial loss, you're allowed to do these things on behalf of the Avel, albeit he can't do it himself. So other people can do it for the Avel, such as Zeisav Hafuchim Tarnimlo. If his olives have been overturned, so somebody else is allowed to go and press them, put the beam on top of them, and make sure that the olives aren't totally lost. So somebody else can do that, but he can't. Likewise, the chado, if he has a barrel that needs to be sealed, otherwise the shrotzim will get inside or it will get spoiled. So logoth, then another person is allowed to go and seal off his barrel for him. Likewise, if he has pishtan or pishtano, his flax has been soaking in the soaking pool and he needs to be taken out from there, lahalos min ha-mishra, so you're allowed to have somebody else do this for him. Likewise, vitzamro, if he has wool that is necessary to now take it out of the dyer's vat, lahalos min ha-yora, it's in a big pot that with the dye is taking up in it, and now if you left it in there, it would ruin it. So all of these things, you're allowed to have somebody else do this on behalf of the ovel. And likewise, Umar beats in Sodeyu, you'll have to go and irrigate his field, Mishatagiya, Onas Hamayim Shalom, if it's the right time for that field to be watered. So then, while the Ovel can't do this, you are allowed to do this for the Ovel. All of these things would be a Dovo Har Oved, and therefore the rabbis permitted somebody else to do this for him, even though no work is really allowed to be done on behalf of the Ovel under other circumstances, and certainly the Ovel can't do it himself, but here the rabbis allowed somebody else to do it for the Ovel. But you see, the Ovel himself is not allowed to do this. Oh, this is Tanya Kavase, like Rosh Shisho Berei Derav Idi. The Braitzer continues, and he says, now here's the opinion of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda tells us, Av Zorin lo stay near, Bisod de Haomed is Lepishtan. Rav Yehuda goes one step further, he's even more makel, and he says, not only can they do all the things that the Tanakhama said that you're allowed to do on behalf of the Ovel, but let's say he has a field that is a stay near, a field that's a stay near is a field that has been plowed already. It's empty, though. It hasn't been planted. So if you don't go and plant now, this field is not going to get the main benefit of having been plowed. And likewise, if you have a field that's going to be planted with pishtun, with flax, so if you don't do this right now, it's not going to be able to have the flax planted. The flax needs a long period of time to grow, and if you don't plant it right now, so it won't be useful. So in this situation, Rav Yehuda says, not only do we allow all the other things that the Tanakhama said, but even to go and plant a stay near, and even to go and plant a field that was waiting to be planted with pishtun, you're allowed to have people do that on behalf of the Ovel. So Rav Yehuda is more makel than the Tanakhama, because the Tanakhama didn't say you could do that. And Amar Lo, so the Chacham said to Rav Yehuda, we disagree with you. No. In Lo Tizra Bebachir, so if you don't go plant this field right now, this stay near right now, so no, it won't grow right now. Tizra Beofel, so you'll plant it later on. You won't plant it early, you'll plant it later. And Nishkefelach, it's not such a financial loss that we allow somebody to do this on behalf of the Ovel. And likewise, with the Pishtan, no, if you don't plant Pishtan, you plant something else. You'll lose Tizra Pishtan, Tizra Mimenacher, and you won't have a real big loss, and therefore they disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda. The Braisa continues and tells us, now the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamaliel. It's a big machlokis as to whether Rav Shimon Gamaliel is either explaining the Tanakhama or he's arguing with the Tanakhama. Rav Shimon Gamaliel tells us, Omer, Zeisav Hafuchen, if the olives have been overturned, in other words, they need to be pressed, and the Einshan Uman Elohu, and there is no one other than this Ovel that can do this. He's the only one that knows how to do this. Again, not sure what the technical requirements are over here, but obviously the statement of Rav Shimon Gamaliel is a fact, that there is no one else that can do this other than the Ovel himself. And likewise, his barrel needs to be sealed, Kado needs to be logov, and again, the Ein Sham Uman Elohu is the only one that knows how to seal that barrel. It'll be a big financial loss if he doesn't go and press on the olives, or he doesn't go and seal his barrel, or likewise, Pishtan Olalos Min HaMishra, the flax has to be taken out of from this flax pool where it's been soaking, and again, I don't know what's involved in doing this, but it requires an expert to do this, and he's the only one that knows how to do this. Vitzam Olalos Min HaYoreh. And likewise, to take his wool out of the pot that is getting the dye in. And again, there must be some skill involved over here. And he's the only one, the Ovel is the only one that knows how to do this. And if he doesn't do it himself, there will be huge financial loss. So Shimon Gamaliel says, the Ein Sham Unum Elohu Hareza Yase Bitzina. If there's nobody else that can do this except for him, the Ovel himself is allowed to do this. So again, some suggest that this is an explanation of the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama allowed somebody else to do this when there's somebody else. But if there's nobody else available, so then Shimon Gamaliel is explaining the Tanakhama allowed allows somebody else to do this. Others explain that allows the Ovel to do this. Others explain, no, Rishon Gamliel is arguing with the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama would not allow the Ovel to do this no matter what, even if there's no one else to do this. And along comes Rishon Gamliel and says, no, if there's no one else to do this, we would allow the Ovel to do it himself, as long as he does a bitzina, so it shouldn't be a well-known thing that he is an Avelis, and yet he's doing this work. And furthermore, Yasser al-Kain on Rishon Gamliel, in addition, Rishon Gamliel is another kula, and he says, Im hoya uman l'rabim, if this Ovel was somehow some sort of an artisan, he was some sort of an uman that was needed for the public. A classical example is he's the moil, he's the only moil in town, and there's a bris milah that needs to be done on the eighth day, and it's during his avelis, and there's no other person that can do the bris milah. So Im hoya uman l'rabim, he's needed for working for the public. The sapor, he's either the barber, or he's the balon, he's the one who takes care of the bathhouse, l'rabim, and there is a tremendous need for him to do these things, otherwise there will be tremendous difficulties for the public. V'hiya es regal, and now it's going to be Erev Yontif, and if they don't take haircuts, if they don't take baths, they're going to have a lot of difficulty with the Yontif. They're all going to go into the Yontif Benuvel. V'hiya es regal v'ein shav unum elhu, and this Ovel is the only one that knows how to do all of these things. Sarei harei zayasa. In addition, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, not only for his own personal financial loss, but even, yes, okay, even it's for the needs of the public. So you could argue, hey, it's not me, but it's for the needs of the public. He's also allowed to break his avelis and go do these things. The Braisa continues and tells us, ha'arisin. An oris is a person who is a sharecropper that gets a certain percentage. So for argument's sake, a field makes 100 bushels. So he gets then either 25% of that, he gets a 33% of that, he gets 50% of that. He gets a percentage of what the field yields. That's a certain type of a sharecropper known as an oris. A chakira, the chakirin, those that have a different type of sharecropping arrangement, that they're paying a flat fee for using that field. So they pay $100 to use the field. If the field makes $100, so they didn't do very well. The field makes $200, so they made $100 profit. The field makes $500, they made $400 profit. So that's a chakir. That's a person who's paying a flat fee to use the field. And then hakablonin. These are people that are hired out to do a job. So we'll pay you $100 to go and do this job. So all of these type of workers, nebuch, the simple understanding over here is that they became avelim themselves. There is an opinion that says that the owner of the field became an avel, but the gears fits in much better with saying over here that these people themselves, nebuch, became an avel. Sorry, elu yasu acherim bishvilan. So they can't do the work, they're an avelis. But they're allowed to have other people go do the work for them, because otherwise they're going to suffer a significant financial loss. Likewise, if a person is a chamorin, ha-chamorin, v'ha-gamolin, v'ha-safonin, these are people that are renting out either donkeys or camels or boats. In other words, they have this product that they're renting out to other people, and nebuch, they become an ovel. So what's the din? Can they still have their items, their merchandise, their donkey, their camel, or their boat be rented out to somebody? So harelo yasu, they're not allowed to go and rent out, because an avelis, they're not supposed to have any work done, even by others for them. However, if they were already rented out, knew the person had rented out his donkey, his camel, or his boat last week, now nebuch, this week he's an avelis, but the guy rented the boat, he rented the camel or the donkey, and he needs them. If they were already being rented out, if there were already people that were using their donkey, their camel, or their boat, so then they're allowed to continue doing so. Hare elu yasu, they're allowed to continue using it, because after all, they had rented it, beheter, and therefore, why should they suffer? Because nebuch, this guy's an avelis. However, if it's a schir yom, if the person who's an avelis is renting himself out for a day, so he's hiring himself out to work for somebody for a day, and even if this is in a foreign city, so nobody knows him, and nobody realizes that he lost his relative, that he has to sit shiva for now, afilu bir acheres, even if it's in another city, so there's no public desecration over here of the avelis, lo yasa, he's not allowed to work, he has to tell him, no, I'm an avelis now, I have to stop working. Because that's not a significant financial loss, because he's entitled to be paid for the 5 hours that he worked, and now the 3 hours that he's taking off, because nebuch, he found out he's an avelis, so he's only losing 3 hours. That's not considered a significant financial loss. If this person is some sort of an artisan and he has somebody else's work that he's doing for them, so even though he was being paid $100 to do this job, so he's a carpenter and he's being told to build a chair. The guy says, here's $100, build me a chair. There's no time limit, doesn't say when he's going to do it. So therefore, lo yasa, because he'll do it after the avelus. There wasn't a set time. Therefore, he's being paid to do this job, and when the job is done, he has a flat rate for finishing this job. Whenever he finishes, it'll get $100 for giving him a chair, so then he can't do this during avelis. Mora says, Afa pisha b'kibolas, that implies, v'lo mibaya she'ena kibolas. Certainly, if it's not kibolas, so it's said to be, he says, I'll have this for you by Tuesday. So in that situation as well, you can't do it. So it says, Afa pisha b'kibolas, even if it's not a set time, and certainly if it's a set time, that's what it implies. But that's adirab, but it's the exact opposite. Kibolas kididain dami. If anything, it should be worse. If he says to somebody, I'm going to finish this for you by Tuesday, and I guarantee you by Tuesday, and now Nebuchadnezzar avelus, so why would you think that that is automatically also not something that he has to do? Just because if he hadn't been given a date of Tuesday, and he says, I just have to make you the chair, and I can do whenever I want, that he's not allowed to do in the Avelus. So certainly he's not allowed to do it if it was due for Tuesday. No, the other way around. If it's due for Tuesday, I might have thought he's allowed to do it. And if it wasn't a set time, it was just a flat rate that he'll do it whenever he can, so then that you're not allowed to do. So it's the exact opposite. Why do you say, Afalpi should be kibolas? So one says, you're right, that's the wrong way to emphasize this. Ela'ema, the Brisa should have said, this is true that he's not allowed to do the Avelus, whether Bein B'Kibolus or even Bein She'ena Kibolus, even if it was for a set time, it's due Tuesday, and now he's Nebuchadnezzar Avelus, he still can't do the work, lo yas, he's not allowed to do the work. Okay, Brisa continues and says, Hoy so melachto b'yadacherim, let's say, he had given somebody else to make a chair for him. So this person is now working on his behalf, and now he's Nebuchadnezzar. So it depends where it is. If it's in his own house, b'veiso, so then it looks like the person is coming to do bedafka work for the mourner, so then you're not allowed to do that. However, if it's a bayis acher, if it's in the artisan's shop, it's in his house, the artisan's house, and nobody realizes he's doing the bedafka for the mourner, so since it was already done before the avela started, the bayis acher, yasu, he's allowed to continue doing this. Maisa shohaya. Merion, that's the name of a person, who was Berei de Ravin, he was the son of Ravin, Umar Berei de Rav Acha, Berei de Rava, and another person, Mar, who was the son of Rav Acha, who was the son of Rava, these two people had a partnership. Habalu, Hahu, Gamla de Torah. Now, Gamla doesn't mean a camel over here. Gamla, Rashi tells us, means a tzemed bakr. They had a together they owned Bein Shneim Shor Echel Lezeh V'Shor Echel Lezeh. They had a pair of oxen and they put them on the yoke together, and one of them was owned by Merion and the other one was owned by Mar. These two people, they had a partnership for a Gamla de Torah, and by the other they owned it together. Nebuch Yisroi B'Milsa, Rashi says the Loshon of Avelus, happened, Nebuch Mar B'Rei de Ravacha B'Rei de Rava, he had to sit Shiva. He lost one of his Zayin Krovim and now he was in Avelus, so he's not allowed to do any work. So what did he do? He separated out his shor from Merion's shor. Upaske legamle, he separated out the ox that was belonged to him from the yoke, and he said, sorry, we're not allowed to work because I'm in Avelus. So Ravashi didn't like this. Oh, Ravashi, Gavarabra, such a great person, Kemar Breder Ravacha, Ovid Hochi, would a great person like this, Mar, who was the son of Ravacha, who was the son of Rava, do such a thing? Because he caused now Merion to have a financial loss. So how is he allowed to do this? Granted, Nihi Dilif Seide Dide Lochaish. Okay, he's in Avelus, so he's going to lose money. He's not allowed to do work. No problem. Everybody's in Avelus. Nebuch can't do work and they'll lose money. But how could he do this? Adachir Lochaish. But look what he did to Merion. Merion is now not going to be able to have his Shor do work for him, and he's going to lose also. Now, Marion's not in Avelus, why can't he do work? And we just learned, Vahatanya, in the Brisa that we just brought down, the person who had the donkeys that he was renting out, or the boat that he was renting out, or the camel that he was renting out, even though he's in Avelus, if he'd rented it out beforehand, he doesn't have the right to go say, you can't use my donkey, my camel, or my boat, because I rented it out beforehand. Muchkarin Eitz Lachayim, Hari Eliyatsu, they were allowed to go and use it. Gemara says, no, this case is different. Why was Mar Bar Rav Acha, Bar Rava, different? He says, who saw her? He said, Adam Choshev Shiny. Everybody's going to know me. And everybody said, wow, Mar was able to do work. Anybody in Avelis is allowed to have work done for them. So here, he did lift him Ashura Sedin, even though it impacted on Merion. He told Merion what he was going to do, and Merion agreed. So he said, listen, everybody's going to say, oh, Mar, Bar Rav Acha, Bar Rava, he's allowed to go and do work. So Mestama, everybody's allowed to have work done for them during Chol HaMoed. So this was a unique situation. Adam Choshev Shiny. We have this many times in the Gemara, that for a very respected individual, the din might be different than for a regular plain person. This perfectly concludes the daf, and Be'ezus Hashem will pick up here furthermore tomorrow in tomorrow's shir. This will conclude today's shir.